Everybody, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, welcome back, everyone. What day is this for the quarantine? Good Lord, it's been a long time.
What is it? It's the 20.
Let's just say I went through puberty. My friend in New York told me that I 66 days. Well, yeah, as you can see, I became a boy, became a man. I have now a man beard.
Still a little spotty.
I'm sporting lumbersexual.
Still a little spotty.
Maybe it is. Yeah.
But you got the gray to make it manly.
I'm telling you, it's manly. All I gotta do now is I need some worker boots and jeans.
You have jeans and you have rubber boots.
Rubber boots. Those are farm boots, though.
You're a farmer.
Yeah, that's true.
We have goats.
We do have goats.
I got baby goats.
We also picked up our Muscovies.
We have 4 new ducks, and we have 2 new goats, and we counted all the animals on the homestead, and we have 24 critters.
I must be a fool. I don't know what I'm thinking. But I'm making moves, I guess. I guess we're making moves. You have a 3-week waiting list on the egg business. We're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I'm trying to keep busy. So you're not feeling well today, just to be candid. So listen, you know, a lot of times you see Snowflake, everyone out there, you hear her, she's upbeat, she's, you know, but today she's just not feeling well. So let's just you know, talk about that a little bit before we get into everything else.
Why?
So people, because that's what people really want to hear. They want to see they want to know the ups and downs.
So we have a family member who posted on Facebook that she was OCD because she wants her boy's room clean. I got on there and told her that OCD is a major mental illness. It's very disruptive to people's lives. It doesn't mean that you just want to be clean, and she should educate herself. She unfriended me and then posted for me to mind my business.
And not to mention one of her, like, friends also got on there and was... two were rude. One was just dismissive. People. In a very dismissive way. Like, oh, yeah, we're going to pray for you. And then the other one was like, oh, yeah, idiots coming on your... Yeah, and then I got upset and I was like, no, you're the idiot.
Now, I have said this to others. I have called out people for saying the weather is bipolar. I've called out people saying that they are OCD. I've called out complete strangers using the same tone and words that I used with this family member. And usually strangers apologize and tell me they mean no disrespect, and then they change the wording on their post, or they ask questions and I educate them. She just unfriended me. So... what happened is she unfriended me, and the reason I know she unfriended me is because she turned around and sent a friend request. So her husband got upset and said, you can't do that. So she had to send a friend request. I didn't accept the friend request.
And I wouldn't. I unfriended her, too.
Yeah.
I don't deal with ignorance. I don't care who it is. I call them out. I call it as I see it. You know what? You know, like, you know, I don't care whether it's mental illness, racial issues. Like, I call them out.
Well, that's true. I've called out family members for racist comments that they've made, too. Like,
that's right.
You have to. Somebody has to, right?
Right. You know? I mean, all around. It's all around. You know, you want people to respect you. Pull your pants up. Carry yourself. Groom yourself well. You know what? Articulate your words. It's really not that hard. You know? I mean, on top of it, you want to fight injustice? Well, you know what? People in the 60s carried themselves well, and they fought. And they got far. But you know what? Being mumble mouth and mush mouth and walking around cursing and acting like ignorance, that's not going to do it. But then also, you know what? In order for us to like overcome the stigma of mental illness and also as a family and families unite, you know what? Here's the bottom line. The bottom line is you have to be like sensitive to that kind of stuff, and you can't be dismissive. And I don't care who you are. You know what? I'll cut you loose.
So then we made the decision that we would announce to the rest of our family and friends that we run a podcast, because we have been doing this podcast unbeknownst to our family and friends.
Well, for obvious reasons. We're trying to keep, we wanted to keep a low profile about it, but then help people, and yeah.
But also, you don't know how people are going to respond. Well, you never know how people are going to respond.
Right.
So we had a talk, and we decided that, you know, we think that the people that we are close to would be okay with it and wouldn't look at me funny and all of that stuff. So we made a long post talking about how I suffer with OCD and mental illness and bipolar, and we have a podcast. And out of, I don't know, hundreds of people that follow us.
Thousands. This is more than just hundreds. Well, it's hundreds of people follow us. Thousands. Across the country. Across the world. Have listened to the show.
I'm not talking about the show. I'm talking about our friends on our social media platforms. There's hundreds of people.
Oh, yeah. Hundreds.
My mother and my mother's best friend were the only two people who said something, reacted, responded in any way.
Well, because they want you to be quiet and shameful about it.
So none of our friends have reached out to us. None of our friends have liked anything that we've done. It's just, I don't know. It's all kind of affected me.
Well, people have responded to, I reposted it again to make it public.
Nobody's responded to me. None of my family. None of my friends.
But it's not just you.
Had one family. I'm sorry. My cousin. My cousin did respond to me.
But you also have to look at the totality of all the posts and see.
No, I don't. I have to look at the totality of my page and the people who follow me. And nobody said anything. I don't really care about your followers.
Well, you should, because some of them are your friends too.
But they didn't respond to mine.
Well, that's true, and I guess I'm trying to make sense of all of this, and I think the biggest challenge here is how do I put it? Individuals don't know all the time what to say.
I know, but you could say something.
That's true. I mean, you could say something. You could say, "Oh, I'm sorry that," or not even if you wanted to give pity. I don't know, you definitely want to weigh, to say something about, someone who has been so brave as to really talk about, issues that they're going through. That's for sure. And I don't know.
So it's affected me in some sort of way. And mind you, this woman has never been completely nice to me. She forever says my name wrong, even though I've corrected her. And she does it in a joking manner. But when somebody corrects you about their name, you need to say their name correctly, not how you want to say their name. So, and it just showed, I guess it showed her true colors, but it did affect me. And so now I'm kind of in a mood.
And it's easy for you to say. So I guess that leads into, we don't need to talk about how was your week, because that
was...
We just did. But if there was a song to describe your week, which one would it be?
Sound of Silence.
By Disturbed.
Yeah.
That's very deep.
Not really.
All right, so what we'll do is before we break, or when we break, we'll listen to...
Just a part of it.
Disturbed. I'm trying to see if I can tee it up a little bit. Darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping. Yeah, that's definitely, that's interesting. Which is interesting because, like, I feel like I'm so busy. Like, we're co-producing this podcast. I'm working full time. I'm helping family members launch businesses. We're running an egg business and a homestead. And you know what? So this week, I'm feeling like David Guetta. And I'm going to play this before the interview with Katie. Because, and then also Katie also gave us her song, which we'll play at the end of her interview. Well, more about who we, but I'm going to play a little bit of David Guetta's song too. That's the way I'm feeling today. I feel like I'm just moving. I'm constant. We picked up goats, ducks, selling eggs. You're selling 3 dozen eggs. 4 dozen. That's exactly how I'm feeling. That's how I'm feeling right now. Okay. So what we'll do is well, let's first talk about our guests. Katie, oh my gosh.
Katie was great.
Yeah.
Katie suffers with bipolar 1. She was diagnosed in 2012, so it was relatively,
Conibear.
it's not brand new to her, but relatively. She's a writer. She's a creative writer. She's written for the BBC and Huffington Post.
Pose.
She has a blog,
Yeah.
and she's all about mental health advocacy. So she was great to talk to. She's in London, so it was 1 o'clock in the morning when we talked to her.
So it was really great that she actually stood up.
Yeah.
She stayed up with us. And we also had technical issues,
Yeah.
and she didn't just say bug
Poor
off and
thing.
go to
I know.
bed.
Poor thing. We couldn't get Skype to work. So.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we will take a break right now. We'll play your song, and then we'll have our normal commercial break. And then when we come back from that, we'll play my song just to kind of get people ready for the interview. And then we'll go into the interview.
All right.
All
Thanks for
right.
listening.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Let's see. You know, it was funny because while we were before recording, we kind of talked a little bit about our trip to the UK. And Katie actually went to school. Where did you go to school, Katie?
In Bath.
Oh, very nice. We love.
Yeah.
Wasn't it one of the best? That was one of the best. Oh my gosh, that was such a great.
We had so much, and you know, we were only there for like a day.
I know, and that sucked. We all love to spend more time
Yeah,
there.
we wanted to go to the actual Baths and everything, but we were just there quick for a day.
Yep.
Just today, yeah.
We had tea on the bridge that has the rest that has all the shops and stuff on the actual bridge. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, over the river. I forget which river that is.
I can't remember either, to be honest.
Yeah. It was very awesome. I thought it was very cool that they built little shops on an actual bridge.
Right.
Yeah, it's very cute. It's very cute.
And then you live west of London now, and or in the London metropolitan area, which I don't know. how you do it, because that would just mess with my anxiety if I had to travel west of London into London every day. We did that. It took us 2 hours to go down that major expressway, past the airport, into London, and we had to go all the way on the other side, which
was...
We
were driving, though. We might take trains.
Oh, yeah. Well, driving is a nightmare.
Driving is horrible. Don't drive into London.
We're like, yeah, we're fine.
Yeah, we'll actually make it. It's just fine. Yeah, we learned our lesson.
The hard way.
So, Katie, you know, you follow us on Twitter, and we're so excited about it. The show has just gotten such response, and someone of your caliber, just to have the opportunity to interview and share with this global audience that we're building in this community is just fabulous. And I was reading your background, and it's just incredible. So why don't you, like, just sort of tell us a little bit, and don't worry about, take your time, tell us just about your who you are, and then we'll dig into the weeds as we go along.
Yeah, sure. So I was diagnosed with bipolar 1 back in 2012, and something that really helped me at the time was writing, like journaling all my thoughts, putting everything down on paper, and trying to figure out what the diagnosis meant to me and how it was affecting me, trying to make sense of it, really. And I'd studied creative writing in the past and sort of used that knowledge that I had to kind of sort through all the emotions I was having, because, you know, like being diagnosed is like this huge thing and it's just really intense at the time, and I just wanted to understand it a bit better. And so I set up a blog, Stumbling Mind, and that's how I started getting into writing and putting my story out there online, because I just thought, I'm an open book. I don't really care who knows that I have bipolar. I'm not that bothered. I want to help other people that are in the same position as me, or worried or got family or whatever with bipolar. And I got more and more sort of confidence with it, with writing, and I just started thinking of doing it as, first of all, it was like a part-time job, just writing, pitching to people, to like news outlets, magazines and all that kind of thing. And then it sort of just gained a lot of traction all of a sudden, and I was like, oh, this is quite fun. Oh, people want to read what I've written. That's nice.
Yeah, and just to kind of slow down and kind of dig in just a little bit, first talking about your blog, I mean, I see some of the topics that you talk about. You talk about suicide. You talk about romanticizing mental illness and managing sleep. And that's something that Snowflake has a problem with at times, is managing sleep. Why don't we talk about those just a little bit as subject matter, starting maybe with stop romanticizing mental illness, because that's a big problem.
It really is, yeah. I think I read an article in Marie Claire. It was an interview with the actress Dakota Johnson, and she was saying how her depression, for instance, was beautiful. And I just like, whoa, no, okay, depression is never beautiful. And if you think it is, then I don't think you have depression.
Exactly.
It's not pretty.
Yeah, well, what you have is a moody day, maybe, but you don't have depression, because it's debilitating. And, you know, and when you start talking about romanticizing mental illness,
they do it a lot online. Like, you see it, too, in, like, the memes and things that go around social media is, you know, kind of like the moody and depressed female is rescued by the knight in shining armor, or, you know, it's beautiful to be depressed and tragic and things of that nature.
Well, and, you know, and people are so flip about it. Like, we just had the experience where people are like, oh, yeah, you know, I had to clean my room because I'm OCD. Like, no.
Yeah.
You know, like, listen, you know, Snowflake has battled it her entire life was just diagnosed maybe for like what 14 years ago. No, not even.
No, the OCD was just recently.
Recently diagnosed. We never knew what it was. And like people can just say that and just be so flip about it. Like they have no clue what it's about. I'm sorry. I'll get off my soapbox, but go ahead.
That's all right. I've had people as well, and I think in that post as well, I was talking about how I was at a party and just started talking to random people I didn't know very well, and they were saying, oh, so-and-so's got bipolar, they've just been diagnosed, and the group was sort of going, yeah, everyone has bipolar now, it's like so in fashion, it's so in to be bipolar, I think people just want to be bipolar.
Yeah,
I was like, heard that too. Oh no.
I don't know anybody who wants this.
No way. No, no. It's such hard work.
It does seem like it has come into fashion, and I think that's because a lot of people are now speaking out about it. So we have a lot of celebrities that have come out, and we have a lot of, you know, there's actresses, there's Carrie Fisher was one who came out, and then you have Demi Lovato has come out. Mm. So it seems like it's in fashion. I can see where they're saying that, but nobody wants bipolar.
No, definitely. And I'm that person that I will go, excuse me, no, in a conversation. And I just told them that, you know, it's like debilitating and self-destructive. It's not fun. If you think mania is fun, you're dead wrong. It's not a fashionable thing. And I was like, yeah, read this and read my blog and, you know, educate yourselves. And I just walked off.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be, you know, I always like to call people out. I know not everyone is comfortable doing that, but I like to say things how they are and tell people when they're being stigmatizing and ignorant. Right. Yeah.
I think we have to. I think we have to as a group of people who have bipolar, you know, as our group, our cohorts, we have to do it because who else is going to? And then you have these people running around with these false notions and ideas of what it is to be bipolar, or what it is to have OCD, or these any other schizophrenia even, you know, like one of my biggest pet peeves is when people are like, oh, the weather is so schizophrenic today, or the weather is so bipolar. And it's like, pick a different adjective. Like it's not an adjective, really. It shouldn't be. So you need to find and get your horse and pick a different adjective.
Like English is like a great language. There's so many different adjectives that you can use.
Yeah, you could choose so many.
So many. I mean, our language, we've stolen it from so many different countries and put it all together. You know, there's loads of words you can use.
Yeah, there's no reason to use this as an adjective.
Right. And, you know, and just to kind of dig even deeper, like, let's talk about the sleep issues. I mean, that's obviously something you struggle with, and it's in Snowflake struggles
with. Most bipolars struggle with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how's that been for you?
Sleep. Yeah. It's like my nemesis. trying to get to sleep, trying to stay asleep. I'll wake up like 2-3 in the morning, like, ding, I'm awake. Oh, I have loads of ideas. I'm not going to get to sleep for the rest of the night. But yeah, insomnia has just been like a major issue for me. And I find it's like a major trigger for a manic episode. Definitely. If I'm not sleeping, if I have like 2-3 days in a row where I'm not sleeping properly, I can go right up. My mood can just skyrocket.
That's about my limit too. 2-3 days.
Yeah.
We know that we have 2-3 days to get it under control, and if not, I'm gonna go manic.
Yeah, it's like big flashing warning sign, like,
yeah,
I need to sleep. Someone help me sleep.
Yeah, somebody please help me sleep.
Yeah,
it's all gonna go wrong.
Well, and you know, and do you take any aids, like melatonin? Trazodone. Oh, well, yeah, RX as well. I know Snowflake just takes melatonin at night, and it helps sleep most nights.
I don't really take anything, to be honest. I mostly try and like stick to routines and not drink caffeine too late. I found with my new sort of medication, it knocks me out sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it knocks me out and sometimes it doesn't at all. It's really odd. So, yeah, I'm on Lamotrigine, which is like, it just, it knocks me out sometimes. It makes me drowsy. But sometimes it makes me drowsy and just irritable and I can't sleep.
Yeah, you know, back maybe 13 years ago, actually 14 years ago, we were first introduced to Lamotrigine. And it was, we thought it was the best thing. Like, well, because since sliced bread, as they say, because we were worried about, of course, like weight gain and all those other things that happen. And Lamictal, you don't have that issue. But what we did notice was hair loss. Did you have any of those problems?
No, not noticed the hair loss. I mean, I have loads of thick hair.
Right.
So I would notice.
Right.
I'd be like, what? No, I've not noticed that. I've had eye twitches, like eye spasms, that are just uncontrollable. And at the moment, because my meds went up for a while, because I wasn't doing so well, the eye twitches, both eyes just out of control almost constantly.
Really?
That's... Yeah.
Well, I'm sure when you first saw that, it was scary.
It was really scary. You think, what is going on? And I thought it was because I wasn't sleeping. And then I managed to get that under control and it was still there. And I was like, okay. And I've had people say also, oh, it's a vitamin D deficiency, all this kind of thing. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure. And I looked up the side effects and it's one of the side effects.
Right. So everyone out there, we are talking to Katie Conabear, writer, mental health advocate, public speaker, has been featured in the Huffington Post and Vice in Metro, BBC, just loads of places. And we will definitely link to it in the show as well. And, you know, Katie was just gracious enough to come onto the show. And we just spent the first 13 minutes kind of talking about the blog, and which is really fitting for this moment in time. Don't stop romanticizing mental illness. And I think that's going to inform the name of the show. But I want to kind of sort of switch gears a little bit and talk about, okay, so you started pitching and sending proposals and writings out to major publications and you started getting noticed. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it was really like a bit random. I was like, oh, okay. I met another writer at this thing called Story Camp that we had in the UK for Time to Change charity, which do like amazing things to sort of like get, you know, bust the stigma kind of thing. Right. And we all got together, like a group of us, to kind of encourage each other to blog and to do vlogs and podcasts and all that kind of thing, and use our voice to tell our stories. And I met a couple of people who were in like national publications, and I was like, how do you do it? How did you do this? And they said, you just have to be brazen and just do it and just go, I don't really care if I get 10-100 rejections. I'm gonna send you this email, and if you like it, you like it, and if you don't, you don't. And she was like, just go for it and see what happens. So I did, and that's kind of how it happened, really.
Wow.
I had a lot of issues with self-esteem, where I didn't think I'd be good enough and no one would want to hear my story, that kind of thing. But writing and my blog doing well kind of gave me that confidence. And I thought, yeah, I can maybe do this. So.
Wow. And that's amazing. And what was the first piece you had published in what publication?
I think it was BBC, BBC Free, mm-hmm. because... I'm also a media volunteer for the charity Mind. And so they will basically, you send them out like a little biography about yourself and your illnesses, what you struggle with. And if anything pops up that they think you'll be interested in, you go off and you get involved in it. And there was a BBC Free video about what not to say to someone with bipolar disorder.
Well, hold on. What are those things? Let's talk about it real quick. What are those things? I'm like, curious.
Have you taken your meds?
Yeah. Yes.
Are you a creative genius? Mm. Which so a lot of people seem to think you are. Is that the bipolar talking?
Ooh.
Yeah,
that's not good. Mm. Yeah.
These were all like real life examples that people had heard and said to them. And we basically pulled, we didn't know what they were going to be, and we pulled them out of a bowl and like had to read them out to each other, like in a group, and just react to it. And they just filmed our reactions and what we thought about the different things. And then after that, they wanted someone to write a piece for BBC Free about bipolar disorder, and I just pitched them, and they took it on. So that was really cool. And it was about debt and getting into financial debt.
Yeah, the only reason we don't go into financial debt is because my husband helps control the bank account. Because if it was just me, it would be pretty bad some months.
Yeah, we have a similar setup with my husband. He has certain cards that I'm not allowed to have sometimes. If he's like, you're a little bit up at the moment, are you? And sees me scrolling on like websites and things like that, and he's like, what are you looking at? Are you looking at clothes? Are you looking at shoes again?
Well, and you know what's funny about that, Katie? You sound like a smart person, just like Snowflake is. And the wonderful thing about what you guys can do is you guys can paint a rosy picture and also justify what you're purchasing. It's always a good reason. Like, yes. And sometimes I have to like question myself, like, am I just being mean? Like, no, we don't need that.
Or we can wait to get that. We didn't need to get that today.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've done things like I've been up at 3 a.m. buying Lego figurines just because I wanted to. Just like little ones, like little like nerdy ones, you know, like Star Wars ones and things like that, Marvel ones. Just because I thought they'd be cool. And yeah, 3 a.m. Don't know why.
Wow.
I'll do things like that and they'll come in the post.
Well, you know, I am fascinated by this journey you've taken because you're yet another example of just individuals who may have a mental illness, but it doesn't define them. It may have shaped who they are, but they still have become great individuals. And I tell Snowflake this all the time with all of her accomplishments because she thinks, it's not a big deal. I could do more. And I always like to lift up individuals that are connected to this community because I think you're right. Self-esteem is a big one. And we do have to, like, praise. I did find something interesting, though, and I kind of want to dig in. One of your Huffington Post pieces from 2018, you said, I suffer from psychosis. I have auditory hallucinations. So I hear voices either when I'm manic or depressed. It took me a long time, over a decade, in fact, to face up to this reality. I was in denial that I heard voices and convinced myself it was something everyone experienced. Let me just say amen, sister, hallelujah. There was one time that I talked about this the last couple shows that I like got really sick out of because of stress. And let me tell you, you couldn't tell me otherwise. Like, you know what? I'm like, there is a secret society out here that no one knows of. I was batshit out of my mind. Sorry. I just was, you know, like, and I can say that now because I'm feeling better. If you, maybe 3 or 4, well, actually maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was just like, I would have been mad if you said that to me. I would have said, I am not, nothing's wrong with me. Why don't we, let's dive into that. Like, tell me a little more about those experiences.
Oh, well, I started hearing voices when I was about 18, when I went to university. When I went to university, I was like super manic. And I started hearing these voices that were like pushing me to do things and telling me I was amazing. And it was great at the time. And I just thought it was sort of my internal monologue. But what I realized later on was internal monologues, you kind of know, you're having a conversation with yourself and you know what you're going to say because it's your internal monologue. With this, I had no idea what this voice, this external voice, it felt like was going to tell me next. I realized that I'd had them for years. Like, I think it was only when I was about 28 where I actually told someone that I heard voices that wasn't a psychiatrist, because I was just like so in denial about it all and that it was an issue. And I just thought people would think I was crazy. They'd think I was a freak. They'd never talk to me again, you know. And especially like with the voices I heard when I was depressed, they were like the complete opposite to what I heard when I was manic. The voices when I'm depressed are really terrifying. They're really scary. I've been in bed and I've just turned the light off, laid down, and I've heard a whisper in my ear just going, "I see you." And I was like, "Okay, what the hell is that?" And just shot up, thought there was someone in the room next to me. And obviously I couldn't like sleep for the rest of the night, just searching the house for this voice that I thought was there. So yeah, scary stuff like that. And I just thought if I told anyone that, they would just think I was completely bonkers, completely mad.
No. I understand the seriousness about it. Like, it's real, and it's a real part of being sick. And if anyone chooses not to deal with you, me, you know, my wife, anyone, we just don't need them in our lives, honestly. I mean, you know, it's like, well, fine, go somewhere. Go, you know, like, I don't need you. You know, yep. Because I used to think that I was like Superman, like I could handle so much, like so much pressure. And I think that was my problem. And I took on so much and I just sort of absorbed it. And without getting it out in the proper way, and I internalized it, and thus I became sick. And so, yeah, I tell you, like, oh, forget those people. Yeah, don't worry about that. Just keep speaking your truth.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I do now. I mean, yeah, it was just like when I was first diagnosed that in 2012, when I was just like terrified of telling anyone about the psychosis part of it. Everything else I was fine because it sort of explained a lot of my behavior over the years, and people were like, oh yeah, oh now it makes sense, yeah, why you were like that or why you were doing this. But yeah, the psychosis thing was kind of the scary one for me, but now I'll talk about it, I don't really care.
So what about, I mean, this is something we talk about a lot when we have individuals like yourself who like have experienced bipolar personally, as well as advocate. What was it like telling, first of all, your spouse, you're married, that's great. How long have you been married?
We've been married 4 years. Fifth anniversary is next month.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Congratulations, really. And how is he as a spouse? I should probably be asking him this.
Yeah, he's shy though. He wouldn't come on here. He's shy.
That's great. So obviously he's supportive and he's really a supportive during the during this illness. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. We've been together 10 years. So he's been there from the beginning before I had my diagnosis, during that whole process, and then he stuck with me. And yeah, he's amazing. He takes it all in his stride. He's like the complete opposite to me in that he is just so laid back. He's almost horizontal sometimes. And that's one of his nicknames, is Horizontal Jimmy, because he's just like, and I have problems, like quite major problems, with like irritability and anger, losing my temper when I'm manic. And he just lets it wash over him. He just ignores me, which is the best thing. I can be ranting and going rah, 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 and he'll just walk off.
Wow.
Just let me get on with it. He's great. He just doesn't rise to it. He has learned if I overstep the mark, if I say something and I've overstepped the mark, he will tell me. He's learned to do that. He's like, no, that's not okay. You can't say that to me. Well, you can't treat me that way. I don't care if you're ill. You can't say that.
Yeah, all need somebody who will tell us that, because bipolar will always overstep that mark.
Exactly. So he's learned to do that. But yeah, he's just so supportive and just has learned a lot along the way with me, has been willing to learn and willing to accept and understand. And, you know, you couldn't really ask for more, really. I mean, he is like, you know, he does struggle with it. And I mean, we're in lockdown here. I've been very up and down with it. I haven't been in the best place mentally. And he has found it difficult because my whole support network has just like disappeared, because I can't go and see people. I can't go and see friends and family. So it's like, it's him. He's the support person. And that's it. So he's found that quite difficult. But, you know, we're still going. We're still plodding along.
So there's no online parties and online support groups, like Zoom meetings or things like that you could be a part of?
Yeah, we do Zoom meetings. But I think for me, I find them quite difficult. I don't think you can get across some of the nuances that you have in face-to-face contact and conversations that you have on Zoom sometimes.
That's true.
I like human contact, and I like to give my family a hug and my friends hugs.
Well, that's excellent, because you mentioned family quite a bit, and my follow-up question to your husband and spouse would be like, how did your family handle your diagnosis, and what was it like telling them and since diagnosis?
Well, my parents like took it quite well. Like, my mum was like, I'm not surprised at all. She was like, it makes a lot of sense. And she actually was the first person to kind of float the idea that I might have bipolar, because she worked with young people with behavioural problems, with mental health problems. And although she didn't know anyone, she didn't have any work with any kids that had bipolar, she knew of it. And one of her colleagues said, it sounds almost like your daughter might have this. And it was kind of, she just kind of just floated the idea, and I just sort of sat with it for a while, for like a few months, thinking about it, going, oh, no, I don't think I've got that. No, I can't have that. That wouldn't happen to me. But yeah, when I was diagnosed, they were really good. They have a tendency to want to fix everything. So I think the first thing they were like, what can we do? How can we sort this? How can we make it better? Because they're very caring people. I mean, they both work in caring professions. My dad's a social worker, and they just wanted to fix me and fix the problem and go, okay, we can sort this out. And I was like, you can't really fix me. It's all about managing it and finding some sort of form of stability and being contented. that's the aim, not fixing me.
Right, absolutely. Because you're nothing that needs to be fixed. You need a vitamin. That's all. You need an extra vitamin. You know, we had a family member tell us that in the beginning. You know what? Taking your meds is just like, or needing to take your meds, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just like needing a vitamin, having a deficit. It's diabetes. It's high blood pressure. It's just like that. And as long as you take your meds and manage it and live a good life, you will be just fine. And I think that is what I take away from your story as well. A supportive network. Take your meds. And that would have been my other question too, because we do like to talk about med management, because there's a lot of people who follow us, who send us notes, and they are still struggling with finding either the right combination or just the desire to take their meds at all. So I'm really glad that you're doing that. So tell us about your book. You're writing a book.
Yeah, I am. It's about bipolar disorder. It's going to be published by Jessica Kingsley Publishers in the UK and here and in the US as well. And it's not a memoir. It's got anecdotes from my own story, from my own life that I've put in there. Mm-hmm. But it's full of sort of tips and advice or things that I've learned along the way of being diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And what's helped me and what can help other people. So it's kind of like a guide to sort of navigating bipolar disorder and sort of everything in between. So there's like a whole chapter that's just about stability and learning to like it, because I think that's something that I struggled with, was not really liking being stable because I wasn't used to it and it felt weird.
Same issue when the medicine started kicking in and it started working, I remember looking at my husband and it's like, this is normal. Like, this is what normal feels like, because it's kind of boring. You know, like, there wasn't the ups and the downs and it wasn't the wild roller coaster ride I was so used to. And I was like, normal sucks. Like, normal's boring. This is awful. I hate this. So I struggled with that too, that coming to terms with what normal is supposed to be like.
Yeah, so there's like a whole I've written like a whole chapter about staying stable, trying to learn to accept it, to like it, and understand it. And then I've got like a whole chapter about how to navigate work and relationships and education. And then I've done a whole chapter that's just for family and friends and caregivers. So it's just information for what can you do practically to help, and how can you help that person that you care about navigate bipolar, really. So that's the book. It's pretty much finished now, which is really exciting. It's due out in March 2021. So
that's so, you know what, will you come back on to promote your book? I would love to have you. We would love
to. Oh, yeah, totally.
So, you know, it's so, you're such a, there was one thing that we noticed in your Twitter handle. In terms of your pronouns, you use the pronouns she, her, they, and them. Mm-hmm. And we were like, well, because that's all, it's becoming, you know, something that we're sort of doing now, and especially in my community where I live my professional life. It's very much with understanding where you are in terms of your pronoun and respecting that. And so you talk about being she, her, and they, and them. And something in my mind intellectually says, well, don't they kind of conflict with one another?
The reason why I put it in there like that is because I identify as non-binary. But I know that I come across as very them, very womanly. And I look like a woman and all this kind of stuff. So I put she, her in there because I'm not offended if someone refers to me that way at all. So it's kind of a way of saying it's okay. It's not a problem. I'm not offended. But I would prefer they, them. This is sort of it's a new thing to me as well. And it's something that I'm still sort of working out. But yeah, it's good to be able to put that, feel like I can put that on my Twitter now and say, well, yeah, this is what I prefer.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because about 3 years ago, I was at a work event, and visually speaking, the individual looked like a he. And my colleague, who actually just happens to live in the Philadelphia region where your publisher is in America, said, no, actually, this particular individual likes to go by they. Mm. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was your first introduction to they and them, well, and those pronouns, really.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing about it, like, I wasn't trying to be offensive. I just didn't know. I mean, it's
yeah.
Like, yeah. It was almost kind of like that attitude was like, where have you been, under a rock? Just like, no, I just didn't know. Like, I'm just sorry. And they're like, yeah, it's okay.
It's okay to make mistakes, and you know, asking questions is fine. You know, we don't learn if we don't ask questions. So I always think that's important.
Well, absolutely. I mean, especially since, like, you know, the world is rapidly changing and everyone's living their best life and being their true selves. And you want to respect that and not stand in the way of someone, you know, living, you know, the best them that they are. So
yeah,
absolutely. Well, you know, I can tell you that this has been just a fascinating conversation, and I could probably talk to you all night long, but
it is
1 o'clock in the morning. But before you go, do you have a favorite writer?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I have lots of different favorite writers.
Well, I can tell you one of my favorites is Ginsberg. I really do. I'm a big Ginsberg and Rimbaud fan, or Rimbaud, depending on how you pronounce it.
Thoreau.
Oh, you like you're Thoreau?
Yeah.
So you still like Thoreau?
I like him. He's crazy.
Yeah, he was. Well, the interesting thing about, I don't know whether he was delusional, what was going on with him, but...
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, he wrote the greatest fallacy on earth.
Yes.
Yeah. and sold it as truth.
And they all believed it.
And everyone bought it. Oh my gosh. Okay, so yeah. So all right, name one that really comes to mind.
Oh, probably more contemporary. Angela Carter. I love Angela Carter's books and stories because they're so strange and out there and like macabre, and I just love female writers and that have like a really powerful voice, and her books were just like, when I was growing up, I loved them. And Ian Banks, who's a Scottish writer, he wrote some amazing fiction and also some amazing science fiction as well. Like, that's just like blows your mind. Because it's just so detailed, and you're just like, how did this come out of someone's brain? But yeah, he's great as well. He's a great artist. They're probably my top two, I would say.
Excellent. And if you want one more, and I'll let you go. If you could, if your mood were a song today, what would that song be?
Oh, what song? Well, I was listening to The Prodigy earlier.
Nice.
So it would probably be like something off one of their earlier albums. What's it called? The Outer Space, Outer Send Him to Outer Space song, that one. Very nice. I can never remember the title of. But yeah.
Well, good. You know what? We're going to...
I'm in a good mood.
When we package the show and before we launch it, we will try to find that song and put it in as our closing song. Well, all right. Excellent. Well, this, it's been great. And as we do, we will drop the links to your blog, your writing, your portfolio, and then your Twitter location, of course. I don't know if you have Facebook or not.
Yeah, I've got a Stumbling Mind Facebook.
Okay. So we'll drop all those links in for everyone to see. You know, if you like the show, give us a review. Someone gave us a one on Apple. And I was just insulted. I was like, okay, tell me why we offended you.
They didn't even put, like, write anything. Like, there was the thing, like, if you're going to give me a bad review, write something down so I know what's wrong and I can fix it. Don't just put a one.
It's just rude.
It's just, yeah, it's kind of rude.
It's just rude.
Just absolutely.
It's definitely not a one. So. I've been listening. It's not a one at all. It's definitely a five.
Oh, thank you. And no, we appreciate it. And honestly, when we make it back to the UK, which we wanted to do this summer, it's not happening because of COVID. But when we get there, we'll have to look you up. There's a restaurant in London that we really like. It's called, what was it again?
I have no idea.
Oh my goodness. What was it? It was Bills.
Oh, Bills, yeah.
It was Bills. They had breakfast.
Yes, Bills for breakfast.
Yeah, they're great.
Bills for breakfast.
Yeah. We loved them.
Yeah,
we'll definitely have to have a little foursome and meet there for breakfast or brunch. Oh, and do you like sticky toffee pudding? I'm a big. Where are you from in the UK originally?
I'm from Reading, so Berkshire area. Yeah.
So I've noticed that sticky toffee pudding is kind of like the puddings is a northern thing. Yeah, for the most a lot of people in the It's the Midlands, right? Really
the Midlands
like.
Midlands love sticky toffee pudding.
I can eat my weight in sticky toffee pudding.
Yes.
I do love sticky toffee pudding.
Oh, you do?
I do, yes. Love it.
Oh, God. You know what? We're looking for recipes. I think we found one. So, good Lord. Anyone listening, you have your favorite sticky toffee pudding recipe. Please send it to us. So, we have dear friends all over the country now, and we can't wait to get back. And now we've met you, another friend, which is great. And so we look forward to collaborating and meeting you and also helping you promote your book. And we just wish you luck and keep your head up, even though COVID has been stressful for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you for staying up late. Get some rest. You can sleep in and tell Mr. Horizontal to cook you breakfast tomorrow morning.
I will. Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.